If asking your mate down the pub about vaping, here's what they'd probably say. No one agrees if it's safer or not, so you might as well smoke anyway. Now what your mate needs is a Cochrane review. All the facts have been checked at least twice. They'd find there's a lot that the experts agree on and might give you different advice.
Hi, my name is Nicola and I'm a researcher based at the University of Oxford in the UK.
And I'm Jamie and I'm a researcher based at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the United States.
We are both members of the Cochrane Tobacco Addiction Group. Welcome to this edition of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. This podcast is a companion to a research project being carried out at the University of Oxford, where every month we research the e-cigarette research literature to find new studies. We then use these studies to update our Cochrane systematic reviews of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation and interventions for quitting vaping. This type of review is called a living systematic review, and in each episode we start by going through the studies we found that month and then go into more detail about a particular study or topic related to e-cigarettes.
This month we ran our searches on the 1st of February 2026. In terms of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, we didn't find any new ongoing or completed studies, but we did find four papers linked to previously included studies. For interventions for quitting vaping, we found two papers linked to previously included studies and one new included study. Nicola is going to tell you about the new included study in a nutshell.
Thanks, Jamie. The paper was titled Text Messaging E-Cigarette Cessation Intervention for Young Adults in Rural Areas, a Feasibility Randomized Trial. And the lead author was Dr. Guan from the University of Minnesota. The study compared an 8-week targeted interactive text messaging vaping cessation program with a link to a website with resources on quitting vaping. And this was all carried out in young adults aged 18 to 24. They measured vaping cessation at 3 months after baseline, which was a month after the intervention had finished. And the study found that 53% of people in the text messaging intervention quit versus 25% in the control group. Therefore, the intervention basically doubled the quit rate. The study was funded by the Discovery and Innovation Grant, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Thanks, Nicola. It's interesting to see that that adds to the evidence base showing promise for text messaging for vaping cessation in a younger population. We'd love to see some studies in an older population to see if that transfers. So for this month's deep dive, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Jody Gilman, Associate Professor of Psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. We spoke about a secondary analysis she led looking at cannabis use in a recent trial led by Dr. Eden Evans and colleagues on adolescent vaping cessation. That was a study of varenicline, and Dr. Evans spoke about that trial in our podcast in April 2025. During that previous interview, I asked Dr. Evans if they also collected data about THC and was really excited to hear that this particular paper was forthcoming. So I'll hand over to Dr. Gilman to tell you more about it. Okay, so to start with, can you tell us about your background and what got you into this area of research?
I'm a neuroscientist and a clinical researcher, and I study how substances like nicotine and cannabis affect the brain, particularly in adolescents and young adults. Most of my work focuses on addiction and decision-making and how we can translate neuroscience into better treatments. I became interested in this area because nicotine vaping has become so common among youth, but we have very little evidence to guide treatment. And at the same time, many young people who vape also use cannabis. And there has been uncertainty about whether co-use makes it harder to quit nicotine.
Awesome. Well, I was super excited that you all were doing the secondary analysis of this. Would you mind setting the scene for us a little bit? Like, what did you set out to look at in the secondary analysis? Remind us of your populations and why this was an important set of questions to be asking.
Absolutely. So this was a randomized trial that tested varenicline, which is a medication that's already widely used for smoking cessation, and we know it works very well. But this was used for cigarette smoking in the past, and mostly in adults. So here in this randomized clinical trial, we were looking at whether varenicline could help adolescents and young adults quit nicotine vaping. So the participants were 16 to 25 years old. They didn't smoke cigarettes, but they did vape nicotine regularly. And many of them also used cannabis. So the goal of this study was to ask a practical question: does cannabis use, either how often someone uses it or how severe their cannabis use symptoms are, affect whether they can successfully quit vaping nicotine. And this is important because, you know, clinicians might worry that cannabis use would interfere with treatment. And there's been little data so far to guide these decisions in young people who vape.
Awesome. So can you talk us through your main findings?
Sure. So it's good news. The main finding was that cannabis use did not appear to reduce chances of quitting nicotine vaping, either using varenicline or even a behavioral treatment. Young people who use cannabis, even frequent cannabis users, or even people with cannabis use disorder, which is a more severe form of cannabis use, were just as likely to quit vaping as those who didn't use cannabis. We found that varenicline was highly effective for vaping cessation, and its benefit was consistent, regardless of cannabis use or alcohol use. So the medication really did work across the board. Importantly, treating nicotine vaping also didn't increase or decrease cannabis use. So the folks in this trial weren't trying to quit cannabis. They were trying to quit vaping, but the medication was not associated with quitting cannabis itself.
That makes sense. And we wouldn't necessarily think that varenicline would impact cannabis use, would we?
That's right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So that is super. It's great to know. I'm just like so glad that you guys looked into it because so often we see these substances treated as if they're kind of unrelated and siloed in research.
Right.
And we know that co-use, especially in young people, is really, really common, is my
That's
understanding
right.
of it.
And it's interesting because in other substances, for example, alcohol use disorder, quitting smoking is beneficial to quitting drinking.
Yeah.
So these substances are very interrelated. So there was a hypothesis that, you know, trying to quit one addictive substance while continuing to use another might hinder their ability to quit. So if they're using cannabis, but they're trying to quit vaping, maybe it would hinder their ability to quit vaping. We just didn't see that that was the case.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I suppose like, this is just me thinking out loud, but when you think about alcohol and smoking and kind of the like shared cues there, right? You're like having a drink with friends, it cues your brain to go ahead and smoke.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something different there when it comes to cannabis and nicotine. Like, are they often used concurrently or are people using them sequentially, as it were?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Yeah. Sometimes they use concurrently, actually, in devices where you can have cannabis and nicotine in one device.
Yeah.
So there are teenagers who use it together, but then there are also people who use both.
Yeah.
And they use it in very different contexts.
Yeah.
So they use their vape pen, you know, a lot of them used all day, very, very frequently, but they only smoked cannabis with friends or
yeah.
they only smoked cannabis on the weekend. So you really have across the board types of use in these kids.
Interesting. Did anything that you find particularly surprise you?
It did surprise me. So based on some prior studies and what we know about brain systems involved in addiction, we thought that heavier cannabis use might make quitting nicotine harder, especially for people who use both together, like we just talked about. But we didn't see that. The consistency of the treatment effect across different levels of cannabis use was surprising, but also reassuring. And what this means is that if a kid wants to quit vaping, but they say, I really have no interest in quitting cannabis use.
Mm.
Of course, we would encourage them and do some motivational interviewing to encourage quitting cannabis as well. But if they're very adamant that they really only want to work on vaping, they still can.
That's awesome. That is a really reassuring finding. What do you think should be done next following these findings? Either research, treatment, both, anything else?
Yeah. So from a research perspective, I think the next step is to test integrated approaches that address both nicotine and cannabis together, especially for youth who want help with both. So
yeah.
Like you said, varenicline might not be the answer. Varenicline might be the answer to vaping and smoking, but not cannabis. So we can pair these with other interventions like contingency management or motivational interviewing for youth who want help with both. We also need some longer term follow-up studies in more diverse populations, larger populations, to understand how these patterns evolve over time. And ultimately, our goal is to make these treatments more accessible and more effective for young people who are navigating multiple substance use risks at once. So as you can imagine, there are a lot of kids who are struggling with substance use, and often they don't just choose one substance. Often these kids are drinking, are smoking, are using cannabis. So I think that an overarching goal of not only this study, but our research program is to help these high-risk kids.
Absolutely.
And develop these new treatments.
And what, because I'm a little bit less knowledgeable when it comes to interventions to help people quit cannabis. You mentioned contingency management, so like financial incentives, which
That's
we
right.
know also work for smoking cessation. And I don't think we have any evidence yet on vaping cessation, but I don't think there's any good reason to assume they wouldn't work in that context. Would you think about designing an intervention that was using the same tool for multiple substances or kind of using different tools for different substances simultaneously?
That's a great question, and it's a very active question in the field. There are certainly drug-specific medications. So, particularly opioids. And there are certain drugs in the brain that will block receptors of certain psychoactive substances, and they're very drug-specific. However, what we know about the brain is there's this addiction circuitry that's common, and there's reason to believe that there could be a pharmacological intervention, and I know people are looking at something called orexin antagonism for this, or a behavioral intervention, so motivational interviewing or therapy, where you can just target sort of the underlying reasons why people are using these drugs. So I think both strategies are being actively investigated, both drug-specific treatments and treatments that work across substances.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see more research on this. I think it is so interesting. And thank you for doing this work and coming on the podcast and talking to us about it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for your interest in this study, and thanks for what you do. Getting this information out is just so critically important.
Yeah, we think so too. Okay.
It was really great to hear about this kind of extra information, and it felt like such a valuable insight. And it's really interesting that that wasn't one of the initial outcomes, or one of the, should I say, primary outcomes of the trial. This is kind of like a secondary analysis that they've done afterwards. And I guess kind of goes to show that if you collect this extra information, for example, here they were collecting that extra information about cannabis use, it does then allow you to do these extra analyses, which can tell us a lot more, even if it's not your main aim. And that could then potentially lead on to further research where that is more the kind of central aim.
Exactly. And as you know, Nicola, one of the things I'm really interested in, particularly with adolescents vaping nicotine, is about co-use with other substances. What's going on there? So often in our research fields, we're like siloed and only looking at nicotine, but we know usually that behavior doesn't exist in a vacuum. So I was really happy to see this research, and I really hope more like it follows so we can learn more about different co-use patterns in different populations.
And it sounded like here in this study, they were looking at the use of nicotine vaping alongside cannabis smoking. But also, something that'd be quite interesting to look at is, we know some people vape cannabis and how that also feeds into the mix.
Yes, and I think some people even vape a mix of cannabis and nicotine sometimes. And like, how does that get represented in the data we look at? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so hopefully see more in this area because some of these things are reflecting the actual use in the real world. How we look at it as researchers, if it is siloed, isn't actually necessarily what's going on out there.
Exactly. We got to be a little bit cognizant of real-world use patterns, even within randomized controlled trials. All right, well, that is it from us. Thank you so much for listening. For those of you attending SRNT next month, we hope to see you there. And either way, we look forward to talking to you again next month. Please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you to Jonathan Livingston Banks for running searches, to Elsa Butler for producing this podcast, and of course to all of you for tuning in. The music is written by Johnny Berliner and I and performed by Johnny. Our Living Systematic Reviews are supported by funding from Cancer Research UK. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Nicola and I and do not represent those of the funders.
Switching to vaping is safer than smoking. May help you quit in the end. But remember to mention the findings we have. Can't tell us what'll happen long term. Even though we know vaping is safer than smoking, we may still find cause for concern. If you're thinking of switching to vaping,
do it!
That's what the experts agree. Smoking's so bad for you, they all concur. The vaping beast burning, but there's much to learn of effects long term yet to be seen.